general levels of apathy brings you.
It's only you who's apathetic.
Frosty as well.
Yeah, me too.
Phoenix City!
Welcome to Phoenix City. We are back after God knows how many weeks off. 2 weeks off? It's been longer for you two.
1 week off.
We took 1 week off, did we? Yeah. Okay, it's been longer for the two of you because you were not our last episode.
No.
Frosty?
I missed the last one.
But no, I was already mourning our lost trophy, so.
Your lost trophy? Which trophy is that?
Dude, we've only got one trophy.
Which trophy is that?
Best audio broadcaster.
Oh, best audio broadcaster. Oh, you mean our trophy.
Yeah. Hence why I said our trophy.
I thought
trophy.
The Phoenix had won something at some point.
Yeah, the Capital Cup, which is not a cup.
Yeah.
Didn't they win the preseason trophy at one point as well?
It's a little shield thing.
Have we had the Distance Cup at one point as well? Must have had
that. The Distance Derby Cup exists.
Yeah, we had it before it was played for.
I don't think we've never won the actual cup since we've done it. So it's just always down in Perth. And to be honest, I probably lost it. But yes, congratulations to Jason Pine for rightfully claiming back his title of Audio Broadcaster of the Year. Normal service has resumed.
Yep.
So I congratulated him on Twitter as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything is right with the world.
I congratulated him before him. I congratulated him before the ceremony even happened. I said, well, I'm fine on your win tonight. So
he picked up video broadcast career as well.
He did.
Well deserved.
Yeah. Congrats to In the Back of the Net for taking out Best Website over Yellow Fever. Entirely deserved, like we said on the last podcast. There's no way Yellow Fever should be winning that. Actually, I quite enjoyed the judge's comments, Stephen Holloway's comments about it. He said, blah, 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 blah. Well, Yellow Fever is an important part of grassroots football in New Zealand, and also somewhere where insults are traded.
Yeah,
I'm like, yes, that sums it up.
That's basically it.
congratulations to friend of the podcast John Palethorpe for winning Community Internet Writer of the Year.
Yeah,
and Michael Burgess as well taking out Writer of the Year for the sixth year in a row. So you were there on the night, Dave.
I was.
Have a good time.
We've missed some categories. Oh,
the photographer of the year, Andrew Konega. That photo of Marinovic is just stunning.
I haven't seen it.
I had no idea that photo existed. It's of the save and the pregame.
Okay. I know which photo you mean.
Yeah.
It was absolutely fantastic.
It's a great photo.
The other one with the fog and the trees in the morning is very cool as well.
Yeah, I think he posted those on Twitter. If you should jump on his Twitter page and have a look at those photos. Have I missed any other categories? Oh, White Amar. So one program of the year, was it? I just butchered that completely.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Does anyone really care about program of the year?
It's a weird category.
White Amar would if they won it.
Yeah, true, actually.
And the people that produce it care enough, so.
And publication of the year went to Capital Football, Matt Snadden, for the 2017 Central League Reviews, which is a very... It's strange that we get such a well put together copy of our amateur local league when nothing like that exists for, say, the Handy Prem, which would be nice.
But he does that every year.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Always good.
Yeah, it's great.
I've got a few copies at home from when my images were used, and it is really, really good.
I'm hoping that they do a press release of the year next year.
Press release of the year?
Yeah.
Who's going to win that?
Well, I'm hoping Andreas Herif or Andy Martin will be nominated.
Actually, Interview of the Year could be quite a cool category. You'd have to nominate other people. You couldn't nominate yourself for that one. So,
no, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting. All right, so shall we talk some football? Can we talk about the media first? We'll jump into football. And the Phoenix have played some preseason games. I've seen 0 minutes of preseason football from the Phoenix, bar the FFA Cup. So, yeah, let's have fun with that. I think Palmy was first.
Yep.
So I went to Palmy. The game against Napier City Rovers and Palmy.
Yep.
Was it shit?
It could have been better. We were as dominant as I thought we would be.
Yeah.
4-0 up really, really early on. And to be fair, it could have been more. Napier didn't really create a hell of a lot. I'm trying to remember. It's a few weeks ago now since it was there.
Didn't
Copper pick up two yellows or something?
So Copper's was interesting, actually. He got a genuine yellow, and he had a few more challenges that he could have got a second yellow for. Right on the stroke of half time, he did another challenge, which was a yellow card. And because it was pre-season, the ref, who I think was Robert Fleetham, I think, said sub him or he's off. So they subbed him off and brought somebody else on. I think it was Roofer they brought on at the time.
Yep.
So it was quite interesting. He would have been sent, and it was a justifiable two yellows from my vague recollections of it now. There was some nice interplay in the front third, which I hadn't seen previously, particularly in comparison to the FFA Cup. The understanding between Burns and Krishna and Singh looks like it's developing quite nicely. I was really, really impressed with that. And Jacob Tratt, to be fair, up and down that right-hand line was really good. And again, with his work with Burns, who was playing out there quite often. Mm. Wasn't overly impressed with the Korean trialist.
That's it.
He seems to me a not as good version of Krishna and Burns, basically. And we've already got Williams to fill in a similar kind of role. And Williams looked like he did about the same amount as you when he was on there, and he would be a lot cheaper and not an import slot.
So. It was about me for a second. You looked at me when you said he didn't know as much as you. I thought you were talking about me. I'm like, yeah.
I've never seen you play football. I've just heard the reports. Actually, no, that's not true.
It's not.
I have seen you play football. I've seen you play football at the stadium and have images of you doing so.
I missed from like a meter, like
you
not even a meter.
Sure did. A foot and out. You still did the knee slide into the corner flag at the end. It was amusing. Five nil. Napier, they didn't really have a lot. There was one, actually, to be fair, one player on their right-hand side was giving Kakache an absolute lesson. He doing him all day long. It was fantastic to watch, actually. He was really taking the opportunity to shine in front of the Phoenix coaches.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't remember his name, don't remember his number, so I can't even look it up, but I was really impressed with that and not impressed with Kakache. Again, thinking that Kakache isn't really the answer. They did do the 3-4-1-2 kind of formation with the wingbacks, and Doyle put in a shift and a half up and down that wing. He was very, very good. So
That's the kind of player we need Doyle to be now. He's one of the senior players in the team and been a few years, and we need him to be more than just solid now. So
I totally agree. I'd prefer to have him in the back three with Durante and Taylor of the defenders that we currently have available.
Did Jura play?
Jura played, yep. So I'd prefer that lineup. Fox was injured, and he was spent the game in the grandstand. I think he's coming back from. He was the game against Lower Hutt, or the inter-squad interspersed with Lower Hutt players. He was running a lot, and he was running a lot at that game as well. So he can't be far away.
This trialist, he's the one that's just come back from military service for 18 months, eh?
That's correct.
How long do you reckon that Roots gives him to kind of get back up to speed? Because 18 months out is a long time, time.
Yeah, but also we need him to fire now for the season.
Yeah,
so, like, yes, it's shit that he's been out for 18 months, but that's not our fault.
Yeah.
And we can't just give a player a bunch of time.
I know. But it still kind of feels like, from what I've heard, that he has improved.
Yeah.
But it's a question of whether he's improved.
It'll depend entirely on how much other interest he's got, I would say, and what the terms of his trial are. If he doesn't have much other interest, and we're happy to let him keep training with the squad, you don't need to make a decision now. You can hold on to him for a while at least without committing to signing him. But if he has other interest, and you've only signed him on a trial for a certain number of weeks, and you haven't seen it in that time, you'll let him go. So I think it'll depend entirely on what his situation is rather than anything, because he'll want to be training somewhere, and if it's here, why not?
I'd like to look at this from a slightly different perspective. He may not suit our league and may not suit the team. Yep. So obviously Ange Postecoglou liked the look of him and couldn't sign him in Japan. I can't remember why.
Has this been public knowledge, has it?
Yeah, apparently Rudian got a recommendation from Ange.
Oh, okay, all right.
So But perhaps it is the fact he likes him because he fits the style of play they play as a team and they play in that league. Whereas the A-League is quite a combative, robust league. Technically gifted players don't tend to do that well unless they are of the Ninkovic, Majewski kind of mould. So
you
it's
mean
possible.
A shithouse league?
Those are your words, no. Not mine.
I think you'll find that Fred de Jong describes Hamish Watson as robust. In the and Hamish Watson not shithouse in the worst game of all time. Mm.
So
robust league.
It's perhaps that he just doesn't fit our
Hamish Watson league,
our league or team.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you say that technical players don't necessarily thrive here because I think there have been ones who have done very well for periods for sure. You know, look at Broich, for example.
Marco Rojas is.
And so there are definitely players who can get away with that in the league, but they do start getting kicked, and it all depends on how they respond to that. And you're not really going to find that out until he's on the field getting kicked, because they're not going to kick the crap out of him at training. You know, that's not going to be what you're doing. So
he's just been 18 months in boot camp in the army. He'll probably be okay with the kicking.
it'll be interesting to see how that pans out, because I think the 18 months out will be the biggest factor at this point. But if they're seeing enough improvement to make them think maybe this is worth a go, then maybe they will keep him around a bit longer. But as you say, the season is fast approaching, so you're going to need to see something pretty convincing to think that.
And especially to use an import slot up, like, yes, we might not be signing someone now, but keeping that up our sleeves for January when we don't have the chance to get rid of a Finkler or something like that, like we did last time around, to bring in your Lujic kind of guy to fill in a gap that we have at the time.
I love that you're thinking we're waiting till January to get rid of a Finkler. It's like, how long did he last?
Well, yeah, true. But we couldn't replace him until January is what I'm saying. So we're probably not going to have that luxury this time of getting rid of an import because they're all new and probably going to be sticking around. So did anyone go up to Carpety for the game against Central League 11?
Sorry, no, I missed it.
Shaking heads all around the table?
No, is it his daughter's birthday?
Oh, is that what it was?
Oh, was it my daughter's birthday?
Probably a better time at the birthday party, to be honest.
To be fair, mate, I actually quite like the Carpety Day.
Oh, yeah, it's a fun day.
Enjoy the day. They always get a decent number of people there.
Yeah.
I think they usually do a gold coin donation or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
They put on a good show, and Carpety should be commended for that. It's decent. Great access to players. The players are always signing. They're always going to win.
Yeah.
I think they've only failed to win once.
Sounds like from people who were there that the Central League team was a bit disappointing this time.
That has happened
in terms
of
personnel and actually ability on the field.
They were last year too.
Yeah.
When they got spanked. I remember Hamish Watson scored from halfway in that game.
It's not a Central League All-Stars team. It's a Central League Select. So.
And you can understand why, with West still having the Cup and whether West would actually release players to play in that game is a separate question.
No way.
They would not.
West didn't release players to go and play in a national continental tournament. So there's no way West are letting someone go for a friendly.
Exactly.
And I think they're right to do that, to be honest. They have every right to say, no, you can't play in the friendly.
Yeah.
The national team is a different story, and I don't agree with that side of it, but yeah.
I can understand the logic.
Was it a 2-0 win?
2-0 win,
yeah. And Ryan Lowry got sent off, apparently?
No idea.
I saw...
Yeah, I'd heard that as well, but I don't know the details.
There's people that he got subbed on and then subbed off again, but I think it might have been one of those enforced substitutions.
Yeah, I think it was a similar situation again where it was preseason. So rather than giving him an actual red card, it was a bring someone else on, he's not coming back.
Yeah, that worries me that we're doing stupid shit like that in the preseason games against low opposition.
Yeah,
and if the players
it feels like games where we don't need to be getting into that sort of niggle. So
and the equivalent last season was Ryan Lowry stomping on some kid from Wests. Not Ryan Lowry, Marco Rossi stomping on some kid from Wests, and we went, oh, that's just out of character for Rossi. Actually, it was entirely in character for the level of he didn't care for the rest of the season. So I'm hoping we're not getting that again this year, but we'll see. The discipline in these games is concerning me because that's two red cards and inverted commas in two games, but we'll see.
Mm. Yeah, especially when it's from a substitute as well. We haven't seen that since the last game of last year.
It's more of a fringe thing for me, to be honest. Ryan Lowry's a fringe player. Why would you be putting yourself in a position where you can get red carded? You're not going to impress your manager that way. That is not delivering what you need to deliver.
Maybe he's trying to deliver. Maybe he's trying to show
he's
something.
He's trying too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair, we don't know why.
Reasonably comfortable as well. I mean, you know, you're up by a bunch of goals. This is not, you know, you're not needing to be playing like that. You know, this isn't last-ditch tackles, you know, bringing down a player or anything like that. It's just silly stuff that you're doing. Yeah. So
again, none of us saw this Lowry incident, so we can't really cast too much shade on him for whatever it was, but not a good look. There's a bunch of signings in terms of commercial sponsors, but nothing much else happening in terms of playing staff.
New wine sponsor.
New wine sponsor, is there?
Yeah. Palliser.
Owned
by Rob, I think.
Yeah.
Involved.
The Intercontinental's back on board. Like, I wasn't trying to bring us in a segue to the sponsorship because I really don't care that much. It's important for the club.
It's the only thing we're signing.
Oh, totally. And it's good that we're doing it, and it's good that it's showing stability for the club moving forward. But
I think the lack of player signings for the last, I think Rolo said it was 48 days
today.
And I think that's
probably 50 by the time you listen to this podcast.
Maybe, yeah. That's
probably 54 by the time you listen to this podcast.
I think that's contributing to the kind of apathy, lethargy within the fan base.
There was like a bunch of signings right before that 48 days, like bam, 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 though. So,
yeah. Well, now, how many squad spots have we actually got still to fill?
Five. Like, minimum
we're
three.
We're 18 at the moment.
Yeah.
17.
You've got one import still available, and then the rest are probably just
one. Maybe two.
Yeah.
One from the south.
One definite, though.
One definite, and that may be sometime before we get the next one, but I'm sure it will happen. It just depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like, for all intents and purposes, Jacob Tratt has earned himself a contract. It's just working out whether he suits the professional environment again, and that's why he's still on.
Well, and he got injured against in the Palmy game.
Oh, did he?
Quite badly injured.
Oh, great.
Well, excellent. I say badly. He limped off, subbed off. He stayed down from the challenge. Unfortunately, I wasn't down pitch side when it happened. I was up in the box filing photographs, so I didn't see the challenge. But he stayed down and had the physio come out, and he limped off the field and straight down the tunnel.
Sweet. So, well, ignore what I just said.
I think that's probably got something to do with it as well.
He
was excellent, though. Like,
he's always been excellent.
I totally understand why you would want to sign him, and I really think he can be the answer at right back for us long term, as long as they can sort out the things that were reasons why
and giving him an extended preseason is not a bad option for that, for him as much as the club working out if this is the right thing. So we'll see how we go.
He's a lovely kid,
and nobody's ever questioned his football ability.
No,
based on what I've seen of him playing in the A-League 2 years ago, I would have offered him a contract straight away anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
And even if he's got an injury now, I'd be offering him a contract.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be a 2-3 year deal.
I think the reason he doesn't have a contract and hasn't been announced as having one yet is purely the other personal issues going on. And you know, it's a matter of they need to get that balance right. And so for both parties, it's probably good to leave that as long as they can and check everything's going to be working out how they need it to, rather than committing early. Because there's no, you know, you can say to him, look, if we can get this all to work, you've got a contract, and you know he'll believe that and he'll take that on board without needing pen on paper and an offer in front of him.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a really good thing that they've got that relationship and they can take their time to sort it out. Whereas I think in terms of other signings, you've probably only got one, maybe two, that are actually going to be big announcements. I think your other players are probably just squad fillers. So, for example, announcing Trapp now, while it would reset that 48-day counter, it's not a huge deal, you know, whereas I think you probably, that import slot is the one that matters, and us taking our time to get that right makes a lot of sense. But it's also slightly concerning that we don't seem to have, you know, it's not like we've got two or three trialists here who are looking good and you're thinking, oh, which one's it going to be? It seems we've got one trialist who's maybe okay and not much else on the radar. And I think we need at least one more really good signing. And, you know, you can argue back and forth about what position it is we need to use that slot on, but we need someone somewhere from that slot. We can't really be starting the season in import down, because we know how important those import slots are to the league. You know, the teams that have three even good import players are light years ahead of the ones who only have, you know, one or two who are performing, and, you know, a few others who aren't.
There's multiple ways how you can use that that last spot. And I think what they're possibly tossing up is, are you going to use it on someone who's going to drag numbers in, or are you, or try to drag numbers in, or are you going to use necessarily
Usain Bolt?
Fair. Yeah, I totally agree. I think exactly the point. You get linked to Michael
Essien. 35-year-old Michael Essien.
I genuinely don't. No, and I don't know either. If he's the player that will offer, you know,
anything.
You, if he was still the Chelsea Mike Lessien, he'd be playing for Chelsea, wouldn't he? Yeah. He wouldn't be playing in Indonesia.
He's been in Indonesia for a couple of years now and not exactly setting the league alight there.
In the Indonesian Superannuation League.
Yeah. And he's, what, 36, 37?
35.
I was 35.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes it okay then, doesn't
it? Yeah, it's
obviously. But he's a big 35.
But you can understand why they linked the name and you think, you know, because he was a good player. But I don't think he drags the people. And to do that, you need someone huge. The other option is finding someone to fill the gap that you need to improve the squad. And that's not necessarily easy to drag those people out here, as is shown by the fact that Perth, for example, are dragging in amazing names. They've got an amazing, you know, first-team squad. And, okay, I'm just going to leave that there.
Oh, fuck off. I mean, do not leave that there.
No, they are quite clearly rorting the salary cap again.
Like, I'm not saying that.
I mean, let's not say it's clear. Say there are clear concerns.
It's pretty clear that you can ask the question.
I'm saying that there's, unless they're way underpaying those players.
Which they won't be. But, I mean, there's certainly enough information there to be asking questions about several teams and how on earth they're keeping things up.
Victory, the other one.
Yeah.
Victory getting two marquees in, basically, but they already have Troisi on their marquee. It's quite funny that they got that Swedish guy from the World Cup and Honda, and Troisi is taking out one of their marquee contracts. I find that amusing. But
yeah, well, that one's
how they fit, they both under the cap is, I don't know.
A lot of people have speculated that that's a backloaded contract for exactly that reason, so that next season you bring Troisi out of the marquee spot and put the second year of a backloaded contract into the marquee, which is, I mean, it's... It makes you question how the whole system works in terms of that, and front-loading and back-loading contracts and all of that sort of stuff is a bit crazy. I mean, you need consistent rules around how that works, and surely looking at the value of a contract over the life of the contract will make a lot more sense.
Yeah, exactly, rather than then dividing it by the number of years.
We're only going to pay you $100,000 this year, but next year it's $4 million, you know, or however you're working it. That's not, you know, that's just taking the piss out of a salary cap.
Yeah.
You know, I think that just basically highlights the issues that we have with attracting players here, and could be the reason why we're being particularly careful with that import slot, or we might be having trouble with that import slot.
Are you saying that what we should be doing is rorting the salary cap slightly more than we are? Is that how we get competitive?
Slightly more than we are.
How do you know that's ambitious. At all, Patrick? That's very, very that's very, very loaded questioning there.
There's no way we're coming near the salary cap.
You could say there's, four or five clubs who've had reason to rot the salary cap and never will.
We have reason to rot the salary cap. We've never won anything.
Every club has a reason to if they win the league, but I don't think Rob's that guy, and I don't think we're the club that are going to. Yeah, and that's a lot of money to do it. It's an awful lot of money. And whilst these guys are very, very wealthy people, that's a money sink. And do you really want to sink millions of dollars into someone that come here that isn't necessarily going to get you 35,000 people in your stadium?
And you've got to pay the extra $30 for the second accounting book to...
To be honest, we don't even need someone who brings in 35,000. I think at this point we'd be happy with a player who gets us a consistent 10 every week, right?
Yes, I totally agree.
And I don't even know that there is a big name player would do that.
No,
it'd have to be massive.
But not even a Honda.
I think you would get a big uptick for a few games, and then it would entirely depend on performance.
How they are performing.
Yep.
Yeah. And sorry, mate, so I don't think a Honda does it. I don't think Del Piero does it. You need, and this is just a sign of the demographic of people that go to football in New Zealand, English name. It's as simple as that. And it's a shame because...
A big player from England.
An English Premier League player.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, a current English Premier League player from a top six club.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe that's the only way
you
do it.
Doesn't need to be English, like, Honda doesn't work here. The only reason Honda works in Australia is because Australia and Japan have had that rivalry for so many years, and he's played against Australia, 20 times over the last 10 years?
Del Piero worked in Sydney for a period of time because they have a massive Italian population. That works. I get that.
Yeah.
It does. That kind of signing doesn't work here. You need a name that average Joe in the street is going to go, I recognise that team from playing for England or playing for Manchester City.
You have to be targeting specific English clubs as well. I mean, if you get a former Liverpool star, that's a hell of a lot better than, say,
a Fulham star.
Yeah.
Stoke player. Yeah, same thing.
And that's what matters, is not necessarily how big a household name they are. They actually need some groundswell support here. And there are a number of clubs in New Zealand that just don't have that many supporters here. You know, they're fringe supporters, whereas there seems to be some mainstream clubs that get a lot of support here for whatever reason.
You signed a big player from, not now, but had played for Arsenal, Liverpool, Man U, you know, those kind of Chelsea. Clubs, those fan bases come to watch that player. They don't come to watch your team, but they'll come to watch that player.
But that's where your problem is. They turn up for 2 or 3 weeks and then they get bored of that.
Yeah.
And so you, at that point, you're counting on performance again. Yeah. So you need a player who not only draws in some people those first few weeks, but is also going to add an element to the team.
Because even Del Piero didn't do that in Sydney. Del Piero brought players in for the first game. He got 35,000 in the first game.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the season, they were back down to 11,000 in Sydney, which is just poor.
And this is why that's just never going to work.
We're never going to sign that player.
We're not going to pay the money for them. Two, they're not going to come here.
And we're trialling you, who's just played 18 months without playing football. Like, that's the kind of player we're targeting, not Peter Crouch.
Quality.
So yeah. I disagree with the fact they won't come here. I think they will, but we have to pay slightly more for them.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a big difference. You know, if you're moving from a current English Premier League contract in England to this side of the world, I don't think it makes a big difference whether it's Sydney or Wellington. I think you're talking tinkering around the edges of the sum of money, but we're never going to pay anywhere near that sum of money, you know?
Nope.
And that's the issue. I don't think if you're making that round the world move, Wellington actually is that different a prospect. But when you're talking a person earning, you know, 100,000, 150,000 and they're a mid-tier player, I think it does make a big difference. I think that's where that thing is, you know. But if you're earning $10 million a season or whatever, I think you're going to go, yeah, sure, Wellington looks fine.
Yeah. Should we move on? We're not signing a player of that quality.
No, we're not. So, but we need to find someone.
We certainly do.
Yeah, we do.
Anyone local?
Do we think the gap is?
Well, we talked about the Kiwi players previously.
Striker sentiment, done.
Yeah.
Assuming that Trapp gets signed. Otherwise,
we definitely need a nine, and we definitely need someone in that midfield space.
Yeah,
because Butters and Singh aren't going to do the whole season for us. Looking at our squad compared to the squads that some of those teams have built. Whilst I'm not even hoping we get top four, I'd like to be competitive and try and get sixth. And against the squads that Perth and Victory and Sydney and City have got, and to a lesser extent Western Sydney, we're going to struggle to do that.
And Newcastle,
I didn't even think of them. So I think it's going to be we need someone who's going to bang in 15 goals and someone who's going to create another 15, and I just don't know where we're going to get those in the current footballing environment over here.
I think the thing for me is I think there are options locally and in Australia in that midfield. Whether any of them are 15 goals a season, I don't know. But I think across our midfield, Singh, Butters and someone else, you might have 15 goals there and that could be fine. But I don't see us picking up a number nine, like an out-and-out striker from Australia and New Zealand. There's no one around who fits that mold at all.
So
certainly
market.
No one available and within our price range. So I think when you're looking at the import slot, it surely has to go up front, because I think you can cover the midfield with Australian and Kiwi options. They're not going to set the league alight, but you don't necessarily need one guy to do it in there. You can have a few, and you know, as form dips and rises, you can swap them out and you can, you know, play around in there. But up front, we need someone who is just going to bang a few in.
I think, yeah, totally agree. I think we've got to get a nine who's going to score us double digits.
Yeah.
But I also think that if we do get someone like that, that buys a lot more space for the guys in the pocket behind.
Absolutely.
Which means that they are also between them going to get 15
and
goals.
And the guys next to them, you know, it gives Krishna and Burns more space as well and options. And both of those guys, when they're not under the pressure, they, you know, Krishna last season was under so much pressure that he was A, putting it on himself, but as a defender, you knew if you marked him out of the game, there was no one else scoring a goal.
So. And Burns coming and helped that, because Burns took away one person from Krishna, because all of a sudden there were two of them. Yep. You do that with Burns and Krishna, all of a sudden there's goals there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between the, you know, between a fictitious number nine and those two guys and Singh, it starts, that top quartet starts looking freaking dangerous.
Yeah.
What do you want from your nine?
We need a nine.
What do you want from him? What kind of player do you want? Do you want a Kaladurdovich with pace?
No, I mean, I would quite happily settle for a Mandzukic-style nine, someone that draws two bodies to him, forces you, both centre-backs in, gets Burns and Krishna playing one-on-one, and hopefully even draw, you know, if he drops back, he's drawing the defensive midfielder to buy Singh space. Basically draw defenders in, give those guys some space. That would do me. Mm-hmm. And then if he scores 6, 7, 8 goals as well, hey, works. So long as he gets those guys space, they'll get goals.
I think it's the interesting one because we, given the personnel we've got around him, you actually aren't locked into any one specific mould you need there. Because, for example, Kaladarevic, if we were just straight have kept him, I think we could make it work with him. Because what we saw early season with him nodding in headers and he was strong and he held up the ball well, I think you could have made that work. But what we saw at the end of the season with him frustrated and all of that, you know, that sounds like a lot of that might have been created by the coaching situation. But that early Kaladarevic we saw could well have worked, you know. I don't think we necessarily need the most fantastic striker in the world. But we need someone who's good at a couple of things, and then we design whatever's happening up front around that. If he's good at dragging in a few defenders, great. If he's good at, you know, turning and shooting, great. We build around that as well.
Yeah, but it's still a...
Oh, well, we just need to find box. Someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
We wanted someone. There's plenty of someones. We had one in Hamish Watson. So if you want someone, there's someone.
I said he has to be good at a few things. He was good
at one thing.
Yeah, one thing.
We've mentioned Hamish Watson more on this podcast than we have any other current Phoenix player.
He's a cult player.
What? I thought that was going a totally different direction.
So did I.
I made sure. Like,
that's strong coming from you.
I made sure that I pronounced that properly. Sorry, pronounced.
Let's move on.
Do you want to talk about Watson?
Are we done finishing with Phoenix?
Some thoughts there. Yeah.
I've just zoned out for about 5 minutes.
I know.
You actually did. It was quite funny. It was like you were staring at your microphone. He's thinking about Zealandia.
No, I'm not. I'm just tired. And don't care about the Phoenix overly much because I'm way more excited about the Handy Prem, which is coming up. Look at that segue. Yay.
We've done some good segues tonight and not segues. Called them, so yeah, stop calling exactly. them.
No, it's fine. The draw is out for the Handy Prem, including the TV games listed. The first game of the season is on October the 14th at 2 p.m. against Auckland City versus Team Wellington, charity cup game, and then we kick off the season proper the week after
with the Wellington derby at the stadium. Yeah. Prior to the Phoenix's first game of the season.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
I think there's 4 Wenix curtain raisers through the season.
Oh, delicious.
Three.
There's two other situations where the Wenix are playing on the same day prior, but they're not playing at the stadium.
Yeah, which those are fine. There's enough gap there to get to the stadium afterwards.
I find that odd, though. Like, I mean, it is what it is, but I do find it odd that they've already got the stadium. They don't have to put it on TV.
Yeah, true, actually.
Actually playing it there would make a lot more sense.
Yeah. The bigger problem that I have is that for the first time ever, we've got Team Wellington and Wenix games, both in Wellington, clashing with each other.
Yeah, it's
on
two
occasions.
I don't like that.
Because it's the same crowd.
One of them
kick
off at the same time, and one kicks off at 2, one kicks off at 3.
Yeah, it's the same crowd that turns up to both.
If I had to make a choice between them, I'm always going to go T-Dubs because they're more likely to win, they're more competitive, which is a shame for the Wenix guys. And actually, looking at the schedule, I think I will only be seeing the Wenix games that are curtain raisers. Mm. I'm not likely to get to any other Wenix games this season.
They jump around grounds a bunch as well. I think there's one game at David Farrington. There's a few at Newtown. There's a few at Jerry Collins Stadium.
Mainly it's Jerry Collins Stadium. Yeah. Most of them are in Pyro.
I don't mind that. But
it's still called Pyro Park. Only the stand is called Jerry Collins.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Cool.
They actually play a few times at Davey F.
Right.
And I think it's only one at Newtown. So the game where the T-Dubs kick off at 2 p.m. at Miramar against, I can't remember, and Wenix kick off at 3 p.m. against Canterbury at Newtown Park. It's the only time they're playing then.
All right, so you can theoretically go for the second half of the Wenix if you want.
Yeah, if you want to do the mad dash across if you really wanted to.
Mm.
But the other clash is silly. Both of them kicking off at 2 p.m. One's at Miramar, one's at Porirua.
Makes no sense. The other thing is the TV schedule is out. Again, it's Auckland heavy. I think there, apart from the 3 games that are curtain raisers, there's one televised game from Hamilton and the rest are in Auckland,
one from Hamilton, 3 from Wellington, and 10 from Auckland.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. When all the clubs are paying the same amount of money to enter, it's a ridiculous TV fee. It's ridiculous that, and that's a non-insignificant amount of money, ridiculous that Waitaki gets 6 games on TV out of the 18 and Southern United get 1 and Tasman have 2.
There's still 4 to be announced, right?
You can,
which I agree, they're not going to all be Southern. It's not going to make up the balance, but I think 4 could make up the balance in many ways if they're the right 4. I very much doubt they're going to be.
No, they're not going to be.
let's not crucify them until we know for sure that those four aren't just figuring out logistics to record four Southern games.
They do need to be South Island games, though.
You'd either certainly hope so,
Wellington,
right?
Well, I'd go Hawke's Bay or South Island, because there's nothing coming out of Hawke's Bay, and they can do them from Bluewater Stadium.
Yeah.
Is it Bluewater?
Yep, yeah, Bluewater, yeah.
They could do another one for Hamilton very easily, but South Island with one, they need to do at least one out of Tasman. They need to do at least one out of Southern.
If New Zealand Football were paying the fee, and it was a New Zealand Football initiative to get this on the TV, it would make sense, because it's cheaper to broadcast those games. New Zealand Football passes that fee on to the clubs. Mm. The clubs are paying for it. Southern United are now paying probably $30,000 to get one of their games televised on TV, which is just ridiculous.
More importantly, they're paying a fee for a deal that they didn't negotiate. Which
exactly. They have no say in it.
We've seen the issues with streaming of games that aren't televised, for example.
Like, surely the clubs are going, just let us do it ourselves. And the fact that all of the rights to every single game goes to Sky is what really gets to me.
Well, we don't know that for sure for this season. We know that's been the case in the past, and I've heard from some of the clubs around trying to fix that. So hopefully we will see progress on that, because I know Southern, for example, have been trying to stream games.
Yeah.
And so if they're A, not going to get TV coverage, they're B, expected to pay the same fee, and C, not even able to stream their own games, that's just crazy. So something on one of those things needs to be fixed.
Question, can they opt out of the deal?
No.
It's a requirement of competition entry.
Yeah, it's like
they have to pay that fee.
That's what I'm saying. If they're forced to pay a fee for a deal they had no say in whatsoever, which is just crazy.
Because if they could opt out, all good. They could say, okay, don't televise our games. We're comfortable. And if we make the playoffs, then we'll pay a fee per game.
Yeah.
But I would understand that. And then they could do whatever the hell they like with their games.
And to be honest, I think that this, whatever this season is totally an Andy Martin organised deal, and it'll be exactly the same as previous seasons.
Correct.
I don't think that.
I think it's very unlikely any of the deal changes.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to crucify them till we're sure on how this is working.
The rest of the draw looks, logic
has prevailed somewhere.
The rest of the draw looks pretty good. The big difference is that S&C, since those aren't playing from Bill McKinley anymore, they're moving around to Riverlands.
Yeah, Riverlands.
Something.
Parkhouses.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because the turf at Bill McKinley wasn't up to scratch, which is fair.
Pretty much.
So it was a pretty early turf. And I like that New Zealand Football are making sure that the pitches we play on are of a sufficient standard.
Well,
I like that. So
it's good that they've enforced it, but I don't think they were the one driving that. I think that's based on feedback from teams last season.
Probably, but it's good that they've listened to that and actioned it as a result. Team Wellington have four away games televised because they're not going to broadcast, which means that 13 of the 18 games, if you live in Wellington, you can realistically see them for the T-dubs, which is cool.
Well, one of those games is the curtain raiser to the first Knicks game.
Oh, true. Okay,
at the stadium. Yeah. So it's not really an away game.
True. Actually, that's a fair point. The second World Clasico is on Waitangi Day.
That's awesome.
Which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I love that. I really hope they big push advertising that game.
You go huge for that, surely.
Yeah.
Make it a day out at Davey F on Waitangi, which will be awesome.
As a suggestion, if the Fever are ever going to sponsor another game, I think that's the one that they should sponsor. Just putting that out there for those that
should Phoenix City sponsor that game?
Well, you got to have some money to be able to sponsor it. And I'm pretty sure Yellow Fever have got more money than Phoenix City.
I don't know that.
No.
I think
they're probably about the same. So, anyway, I'm excited for the Handy Prem season. I'm way more excited for the Handy Prem season than I am the A-League, because it's going to be more fun. I'm just at the point where I prefer the Handy Prem. So.
You like your winners, Patrick.
He's a bandwagoner from way back.
No, but I'll go like the Weenix even. Like,
how many Leicester City jerseys do you own?
Zero.
How many did you try on and almost buy?
I don't know. How many Mario Balotelli Liverpool shirts do you own?
Yes. Yes, one.
Bandwagon.
No. No.
Yeah.
Liverpool were doing shit when they signed Balotelli. It was like the bottom of the Brendan, whatever his name is. Yes.
Rogers,
yes. And it was Balotelli.
So you own the jersey of a specific player and you can't even remember the name of the manager.
I know, I could see him in my face. He's at Celtic now. See, I know this shit. But Balotelli, fine.
He empathises with Mario.
I think that'll bring us to the Chatham Cup and Kate Shepherd finals on the weekend. I saw the Chatham Cup final on TV. I've seen highlights of the Kate Shepherd game. But you're at both, Dave, weren't you?
I was at both.
You're in Auckland. One game, decidedly a better game of football than the other.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was saying this to Cam before that I think the Kate Sheppard game was a much more entertaining game for a neutral. There was a lot of good football being played, to be honest. Whereas I think the Chatham Cup final was probably a gripping game. I mean, it was tight, but the football wasn't particularly pretty. I mean, obviously, if you're a Birkenhead fan, you're very happy with the result, but I don't think anyone would argue there was good football going on. It was tight, it was scrappy, and you were heavily invested in it, you were on edge, and it was entertaining.
It was a terrible game. It was a terrible game of football for a neutral. Yep. Awful game of football. Did not enjoy watching it very much at all. The only reason I enjoyed it was because it was the Chatham Cup final.
Yeah.
If that was just a league game, or if that was a Chatham Cup round of 16 or something, I'd be like, that was awful.
I don't think there would be much on the line if it hadn't been a cup final. And, you know, you do get cup finals where everyone's a bit more tentative because it's a cup final. You don't want to concede a goal and, you know, not be in it.
Until this year, the World Cup final was like that.
I think it was an interesting one in that I think the fact it was a final lent itself to exactly that.
So yeah, obviously Birko won that 5-4 on penalties after 1-1 through normal time. Nathaniel Halamariam having a penalty saved in normal time by Damien Hirst, which was a fantastic save.
Yeah, it was.
Like,
I was very surprised he didn't pick up MVP.
He didn't, did he? What?
No, it went to Solomons, I think.
Oh, yes.
Who was good.
Solomons was solid, but Damien Hirst made
two. You save the penalty to keep them in the game, and then you save the penalty to win the shootout. I think for me it's a no-brainer.
But also he was solid through the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Solomons, watching Alex Solomons, was a blast in the past because obviously he had these the Phoenix connection and the T-Dubs connection and that kind of thing. And
he was good.
He was good. He was solid, yeah.
But the other thing I'll say for Hurst as well is every ball in the air into the box he caught.
Yeah.
He never punched. He never looked like he wasn't going to get there. He came and got every single aerial cross the whole game.
To be fair, no one's getting in his way.
You think about how West play, and they were relying on getting on the end of some of those balls, and he just cut all of them out, which meant that lots of their chances came to not even a shot because of exactly that. So for mine, he was comfortably the player.
I feel like on the balance of it, Birkenhead deserved the win. I felt like they were a team that controlled the game more and they starved West of opportunities and they created more themselves, obviously didn't convert it. But West looked like they were struggling and they were struggling to get their game going and they didn't dominate possession, and that was all because of the way that Birkenhead were choking them.
They also gave it away quite a bit. I was really unimpressed with Harry Edge in midfield. I thought he had one of the worst games I've seen him play.
Well, he's the last name, which is why he plays.
Perhaps Bale was also unimpressed with Nathaniel Halamariam.
Same.
I thought he had a really poor game as well. Yeah. So
not just the penalty either.
It's not just that they weren't getting their game going. Their big game players didn't happen to step up when they were needed.
Yeah.
I think that makes a world of difference.
I've always found Halamariam erratic, even within the game. Just never, like, he'll do some really nice things, but doesn't seem to finish off and then disappears for great stretches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's up there, T-Dubs. They'd bring him on for 20 minutes at the end.
I've only ever seen him play for T-Dubs.
Exactly, yeah. You'd bring him on for 20 minutes at the end and he would run with the ball quickly and then not be able to make his mind up about whether to cross it or cut it or things like that. So,
how old is he? He's going to be early 20s?
No, I think he's 24, 25 now.
Is he?
Yeah.
For me, the standout for West was probably Ben Sepola.
Yep.
And their keeper, whose name I don't know.
Pickens or something.
Yeah, he made some decent saves and
they made him work a lot as well. A lot of ball was going back to him. I mean, in the first half, he probably had more touches than any of their guys up front. They were going back to him a lot to kind of settle things down, but they never really settled. They were under a lot of pressure for a lot of the game.
Yeah. And then, it was 4-2 in the Kate Sheppard Cup final. Dunedin Tech running out to a 4-1 lead pretty early on. I think half an hour in, it was 4-1.
Yeah, it was a pretty phenomenal effort from them, really. They looked by far the better team. I mean, we obviously previewed the game against Wellington United.
Yeah.
They were pretty dominant in that as well, and we saw that again. I was very surprised. You certainly wouldn't have picked the Forest Hill team as the team filled with the better players, inverted quotes, if you will, because Dunedin Tech just matched them across the park. They almost every position they had the better player and
had the better nickname, that's for sure. The Techers.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And Yeah, probably wasn't until the last half hour where Forest Hill started looking like they wanted to play some football.
But at that point it was 4-1 and then became 4-2 and the game was done.
Tech were under a lot of pressure, but they had a solid lead and all they had to do was, you know, play hoofball and they did. And that was fine because they were up 4-1 and, you know.
If a third goal had gone in, it would have been different, but it didn't and they just were able to round the game out 4-2.
No, I haven't seen the television highlight, but the second goal from Forest Hill was an absolute screamer. But at that point, you know, they were just needing more goals to get back into it and they were relying on an absolute screamer to get their second.
A bunch of the third and fourth never looked
like it was coming.
A bunch of the Tech goals were screamers too. Like there were a lot of goals just off the inside of the crossbar that the keeper had no chance. There was one that floated above the keeper and had no chance. And so, yeah, it was really high.
It was a good game of football.
Yeah, it was a much higher quality game of football. Not quite as tense, and potentially the technical skill wasn't at the same level of the other one, but it was a more entertaining game to watch. So it was.
I mean, the key difference between the women's game and the men's game is always the speed of the game. I think the technical skill is definitely still there. It's just a slightly slower paced game, and that was all you saw here. You saw a lot of very good play, but it's not as end to end quite so quickly as you see in men's games sometimes.
Yeah, but it was certainly the more entertaining game and better parts of football, less mistakes generally. Yep. And so, and
really good to see what was an underdog winning it. They were absolutely stoked. They had good travelling support. I mean, Forest Hill had a lot of support there as well, but they were pretty quiet. I think they were a bit shocked. They were expecting to just kind of romp this a little. I think in many ways a lot of Tech supporters kind of felt the same. They expected this, you know, they'd already kind of played their final.
Yeah.
And they turned up and within the first half hour were absolutely dominating.
Because they were very impressive out of Newtown as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they played a team who has dominated their entire season out of the game just by putting pressure on them and giving them no time on the ball, and they deserved every single moment of their win here. United made them work for it, but...
Yep.
They showed their class in the end, and they did the same thing and up in Auckland.
Forest Hill did the same, and I think they must leave them with an undefeated season because they were undefeated through the league and winning the cup, obviously. I don't know if they played anything else. I don't know if there's a league cup or a something else that maybe they had a loss in, but I would assume that might leave them with a completely undefeated season, which
deserve
is a
too,
great
yeah.
achievement.
Yeah, was Michaela Hunt the man of the match in that? Because she was immense.
She was excellent. She got two goals and was very, very good. But Smith, I can't think of her first name, number 7 in the midfield, who was also very good. They were two dominant players.
It's a good thing Smith isn't a really common last name for people in New Zealand.
I would love to know what her first name was, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. So I'll plead ignorance.
Yes. No, very good. I would love to be up there, but you were. And it was a good day out at North Harbour.
I mean, it was fine. The crowd definitely filled in for the Chatham Cup.
Was always going to
from Kate Shepherd, but that's not to be unexpected. And it was cold, but the fans were into it. There's a lot of Birkenhead support there, and they were right into it. And obviously, getting the win meant, I assume, they carried on long into the night.
Did the new CEO do a speech at all to the crowd there? He was on at half time on the TV coverage.
I didn't see a speech from him.
What's his name? Andrew something? I can't remember. Andrew Pickford? Andrew Pickford.
He's interim, though, isn't he?
He's interim CEO,
yeah. It's not a new CEO. Well, it's only an interim.
No, it's a new interim. No, yeah, whatever. He was saying all the right things at half time. I was impressed with what he was saying and did a much better job of anything than Andy Martin did. I was quite disappointed there was no rivalism dropped or anything like that. But,
because I was there, I didn't see
you didn't hear. That interview. So. Yeah, it was good, which was annoying, but it was good, which is good. You want a rivalism. We've had so much fun with rivalism.
I'd rather we just have, you know, competent leaders for the game. So that's maybe it's just me.
Call me weird.
That's why it's good. It's a new thing for us.
Let's just try it for a couple of years and see if we like it.
See what it's like, yeah. And that'll probably do for this week, unless anyone has got anything to add. But we will be back 2 weeks, probably. Let's be honest.
Sometime.
I think the Knicks are over in Sydney at the moment, so we might have something to talk about out of that. But corporate launch this week as well, but the corporate launch is not a public event.
No, I haven't been invited. That's a shame.
Probably
for good reason.
I'll tell you what happens.
After what we did last year, we don't want to invite her back. So we will leave you there for this week. We'll be back probably in 2 weeks, but if you hear from us next week, it's a bonus. Thank you for listening. Good night. more intros or can I stop recording?
Do you have something to use?
No, I have tiny penises, basically. That's all I have.
You have to leave that in there. Please tell me you recorded. And I'm not going to say that because he'll snatch you. You cut out my bit if I said that. But
not only, not only is that hilarious to have said, but the pluralization is very confusing.